Welcome to the Deep Dive. So our source today is the November 2025 update from the Ohio Valley Educational Service Center, the OVESC.
Right.
And we're trying to look beyond just, you know, the internal memo format here.
Mm-hmm.
The real mission is understanding how these crucial regional bodies manage to juggle, well, everything from intensive local programs right up to high-stakes advocacy in Columbus. Quite the balancing act.
That really is. That scale difference is huge. And you see it even in the opening from Superintendent Dalton Summers. He talks about a smooth start to the 2025-26 year, focuses on growth, collaboration.
Yeah, positive framing.
Exactly. And it's necessary because, like you said, the actual work they're doing is incredibly complex. They're shaping state law and training specialists and dealing with immediate, sometimes systemic problems on the ground.
Right. So for you, the listener, think about this as we go.
Mm-hmm.
The sheer breadth of what a single ESC covers.
Mm-hmm.
It really is kind of mind-boggling, from federal policy implications down to, you know, a kindergartner learning about apples.
And maybe the best place to start understanding that pressure is at the policy level. Let's talk about early childhood education, ECE, and specifically House Bill 455.
Okay. Yeah. OVSC's Executive Director, Joy Edgel. She was actually testifying recently before the Ohio House Education Committee, supporting this bill, HB 455, along with other ESC directors.
And this bill is significant. It's not just, hey, we need more money, which is often what you hear.
Right.
This one's about structural modernization. Yes, it aims to strengthen ECE funding and expand opportunities, but the core goal seems to be streamlining the Ohio Education Code. And maybe most importantly, cutting down the administrative red tape that's actually stopping kids from getting services.
And the specific reforms they're backing are very practical, very boots on the ground. The first one is this idea of collaborative eligibility determination.
Okay.
So right now, eligibility for the ECE grant program, it's often decided by agencies that might not really know the child or the family's full situation.
Right. A bit removed sometimes.
Exactly.
Okay.
So this bill would let education professionals, the teachers, the specialists who actually know the child's development and family circumstances, have a real say in determining that eligibility.
Which makes sense, doesn't it? Why exclude the people who have the most direct knowledge? The current system seems to rely maybe too much on state-level processes, which can cause delays.
Definitely. And the second big piece is supporting family flexibility and choice. The idea is that families should be able to pick the educational setting that truly works for their child and their life, you know, not be stuck with just one funding option that might be inconvenient or unsuitable.
It's a push for real access, making the system work for the families, not the other way around.
And Edgel, during her testimony, she was careful to draw a line between childcare and preschool education.
Ah, an important distinction.
Yeah. Both vital, she said. But public preschools have these rigorous state standards. Licensed educators often provide transportation. When we're talking HB 455 and ECE, it's about these highly regulated educational services.
Okay, but here's where it gets a little tricky, policy-wise. And maybe the first warning sign. Edgel actually had to praise a recent reversal of some very restrictive ECE eligibility policies. This happened back on October 7th.
Wait, so there were restrictive policies causing problems?
Apparently, yes. They had led to families, deserving families, getting denial letters earlier in the year. So the reversal was good news.
But the fact they were there in the first place and then had to be walked back, that sounds unstable.
That's exactly the point Edgel made. She cautioned that the long-term permanence of that reversal isn't guaranteed. If a policy can be put in, cause harm, and then be reversed administratively, well, it could potentially be reinstated just as easily.
Okay.
So that's why getting structural stability through legislation through something like HB 455 is so crucial. Families and providers need predictability.
And we should also mention this specific challenge for some communities.
Yeah.
Sarah Rice from the South Central Ohio ESC, she pointed out that the current eligibility process via JOB and Family Services, it's just too burdensome.
Hmm.
It's causing major delays, even denials, especially, she said, for families in rural Appalachian areas. You know, where just getting to a state office or navigating complex forms is already a huge hurdle.
It really highlights that gap between a state policy and the reality of accessing services on the ground. It's not just about the rules. It's about making the rules workable for everyone.
Exactly. So, okay, that's the view from the State House, essentially. Let's pivot now and see how this all translates down to the kids in the classroom, starting with the Bright Beginnings Preschool.
Yeah, and it's great to see how they immediately connect the curriculum to what's happening seasonally. The fall update mentions farm visits.
Classic fall activity.
Totally. Kids learning how pumpkins and apples grow, how farmers work, and it's all hands-on. Feeling textures, comparing sizes, finding seeds inside the fruit. Real discovery learning.
And they're weaving in early math skills so naturally. I love the detail about the apple tasting graph.
Oh.
Kids voting for their favorite apple, red, green, or yellow. I mean, that's basic data, sorting and counting, right there with a tasty snack. I can only imagine the controlled chaos of tallying votes from five-year-olds hyped up on apples.
Uh-huh. Definitely a feat of classroom management, I bet. And just as a side note on their adaptability, the preschool staff just welcomed students to a brand new location at Bysville Elementary starting November 4th, shows how these ESEs have to be flexible even with physical spaces.
Good point. Okay, moving up the age range a bit, let's talk about the Opportunity School. This program really seems to highlight the ESE's role in filling gaps left by traditional schooling. It sounds like a hub for real-world life skills focused on independence.
It really does. And look at how practical the lessons are. Mr. Kenny's class, for the young adults, they're tackling things like opening a checking account.
Wow.
Figuring out how to buy a first car, understanding a lease to rent an apartment. You know, the absolute essentials for stepping into adulthood.
It does make you pause, doesn't it? Is it maybe a bit of an indictment of standard high school programs that an ESE has to teach these fundamental adulting skills?
Well, that's the tension, right? ESEs often step into those critical gaps, maybe because district curricula are so focused on standardized tests. And it's not just finances. The middle and high schoolers in the SOCC Day Treatment Group, that's school-based outpatient clinical counseling,
right.
They're working on equally vital social and emotional skills, things like effective communication, managing emotions. That's huge for their future well-being.
Absolutely. And it looks like they blend it with academics, too. Mrs. Evans working on long vowels and math like Buddies of 10, plus creative stuff like Mrs. Josie and the teens planning a mural and doing fall STEM projects.
Yeah, it seems like a genuinely holistic approach, balancing the academics with social-emotional learning and those crucial practical skills for independence.
Okay, so from student programs, let's shift again, this time to infrastructure building. We mentioned the legislative pressures, and here we see the ESC actively building capacity to meet new demands, specifically with their driver education program.
Right, the MOV ESC Driving School, they're making a pretty significant move here, applying to become a centralized training hub through Ohio Public Safety.
A training hub? For what exactly?
For training new Class D driver instructors. Basically, they want to be the regional go-to place for getting driving instructors certified.
Okay, that sounds like a big undertaking.
It is, and it seems necessary. Richard Hall, who directs driver education, points out they have the capacity. They've got, what, nearly 80 instructors on staff already, so they feel they can train a large number of new instructors relatively quickly.
And the why behind this.
Yeah.
It's that big change in Ohio law, right?
Exactly. The law now requires anyone under 21 to complete driver ed to even test for their license.
Which must create this sudden massive need for instructors and classes.
Precisely. The ESC is essentially stepping in to fix a market failure, a logistical bottleneck created by the new law.
It's like a supply chain fix, but for driver's ed. And it looks like they're planning for the long haul, too, applying for a pretty hefty grant, nearly $100,000 from the Honda Foundation.
Mm-hmm. And note how targeted that grant request is.
Yeah, I saw that. Specifically to buy a training vehicle just for those 18 to 20-year-olds hit by the new law, the ones not usually in their consortium high schools.
Right. Plus funds for things like public service announcements on safe driving and planning ahead to replace their older fleet vehicles. Very strategic.
And Richard Hall isn't just working locally on this. He was on a panel at a statewide symposium.
The Ohio Department of Public Safety Driver Education Symposium.
Right. Discussing strategies for recruiting and keeping good Class D instructors. You can't just build the hub, you need the people.
And they are getting them. Sims Valley High School just joined their consortium, which means 7 new instructors are already in training right now.
So it proves the point. The ESC isn't just delivering services, it's actively building the specialized workforce the region needs to meet these new state mandates.
Which leads us perfectly into the final piece. How they support and develop their own internal teams, the educators and specialists who make all this happen.
Okay, so let's look inside the ESC. Starting with special education, they had a big quarterly meeting back in September for all their specialists.
Yeah, we're talking SLPs, speech language pathologists, PTs, OTs, the CODIRES, certified occupational therapy assistants, school psychologists, a whole range of highly specialized roles.
That must be crucial for alignment, getting everyone on the same page across different districts.
Definitely. Looks like they covered practical stuff like billing updates with Connie Doran, and then important state-level special ed changes from Allison Hoffman and Sarah Johnson, keeping everyone current.
And speaking of needing specialists, they're being smart about building their own pipeline. This partnership with Washington State College of Ohio's OTA program.
The Occupational Therapy Assistant Program. Yeah, that's clever.
It gives those students real hands-on experience rotating through different districts the ESC serves.
That's absolutely critical for workforce development in these high-need fields. They're essentially growing their own talent. But interestingly, even with that,
they're still hiring.
Yep. The update specifically mentions they still need to hire a part-time school psychologist for this year, and they're already looking for an SLP for the 2026-2027 school year.
Wow. So the demand is just relentless.
It really seems to be. These specialists are gold dust.
Okay. Another specialized area, gifted services. Kaylee Gates at the contact there, and apparently fall is in full swing for the gifted coordinators. Lots of screening happening.
Right. They're doing whole grade screenings to identify kids with superior cognitive abilities or specific academic talents.
And once identified, it's WEP season.
Written education plans. Yeah, that's the process of setting challenging, personalized annual goals for these students, making sure they're stretched and engaged. It's intensive work.
And finally, professional development for the general teaching staff. Shannon Leisure, Director of Mathematics, and Jenny Blattner, Director of Literacy. They're focused on something called data infrastructures.
Okay, that sounds a bit corporate, maybe. What does it actually mean for a teacher?
Good question. It seems like it's about helping districts go beyond just looking at test scores occasionally. It's about strengthening their professional learning communities, you know, teacher groups, so they can analyze student data quickly and make decisions that are actionable.
Ah, so making the data useful in real time.
Exactly. Like if a quick check shows kids aren't grasping a concept, the infrastructure helps the teaching team figure out together how to adjust instruction for like the very next day.
Got it. So it's about making professional learning directly impact student learning, not just ticking a box.
Precisely. And just quickly, we should also mention the recognitions noted in the update. Gene Irvine celebrated for 8 years of service.
Yeah.
And two Ohio School Board Association award winners. Kyle Newton named Outstanding Administrator and Melcy Wells as Outstanding Treasurer.
It's important to acknowledge the people doing the work. Running a complex system like this takes real talent and dedication.
Absolutely. So, okay, let's try to synthesize all this. We started with what looks like a standard internal update, but this deep dive really confirms that massive scope, that paradox we talked about at the start.
Yeah.
The OVESC is simultaneously running these very local, very hands-on programs, farm visits, Apple graphs, teaching kids how to open bank accounts, while also shaping state policy like HB 455 and building major regional infrastructure like that driver ed training hub.
The takeaway for me is just how essential these ESCs are. They're the glue. They work to guarantee access and equity, especially when you see policy hiccups like that ECE eligibility confusion potentially shutting families out.
They really are the operational link, aren't they? Fixing those gaps between state intentions and local realities.
Exactly. The indispensable connector.
So that's the story of this ESC, at least for this snapshot in time. And maybe a final thought to leave you, the listener, with.
Yeah.
Considering this heavy focus we saw on workforce development, building pipelines for OTAs, teachers, driving instructors.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly can these regional systems really adapt to new laws like that under 21 driving requirement if they can't simultaneously crack the code on recruiting and retaining enough of those high-demand specialists like the school psychologists and SLPs they still need?
That's the critical question, isn't it? You can mandate the service, build the hub, pass the law, but can you actually staff the solution adequately and consistently? Something definitely worth thinking about in your own local context.
Indeed. Until next time on The Deep Dive, stay curious.